Welcome to the bonus level.
Hello and welcome back to the Bonus Level Podcast. This is level 48. I'm Jack and we got Josh. And hey. joining us this week is a returning guest, a favorite guest. The wonderful, the lovely, the smart, Jacob Brown.
Howdy.
Thanks for coming back again. Again, you are a returning VIP and someone that always has good conversation. And I always just am amazed that you're related to Josh.
Yes. Yeah. Same. Yeah. I appreciate you too. That's what I meant to say.
So anyways, this week we're going to talk about something a little serious. So last week we talked about the coronavirus and kind of rejuvenated the show in a way of, you know, we had a 6-month hiatus and there was a lot that's going on. Obviously the world is under a global pandemic and lockdown and things are slowly starting to go back to normal, although slowly in some places, slower than others. But we uncovered a question last week, and the question surrounding morality when it comes to stressful situations, like, you know, this pandemic, like this global thing that we're dealing with. And we want to talk about morality in general first, but then also go through some scenarios just to kind of see where the moral compass comes from, for starters, but then also what it looks like when kind of the rules and the societal structures are kind of thrown out the window, right? Yeah. Because I think that we can all agree that morality is by definition built around how you're raised, right? Mm-hmm. Your surroundings, your influences, kind of you're told what's wrong and right from young, like whenever you're very, very young, and then raised on that. And then you ultimately make decisions on your own. But in general, you're kind of influenced along the structures, even if it's not by your parents, but by society in general. Do you agree?
I think so.
Sounds reasonable.
Sounds about right. So the main definition, so the Webster's Dictionary definition of morality is the principles concerning the distinction between right and wrong or good and bad behavior, right? So whether or not it's wrong to steal a cookie from the cookie jar or wrong to steal your neighbor's bike or beat up the guy down the street, you know, or you know, obviously the severity goes on and on and on. But the difference between good and bad, inherent, not inherent, where I want to start with Jake first. So where do you think that you got your morality from as far as your worldview of what's right and wrong?
I don't know. It's hard to say from one place. I think if you would have asked me even 2 years ago where I stood on certain things, it'd be totally different now. So I think it's ever changing. So it's hard for me to put it on one thing. I feel like, you know, my parents had very strong ideas of what was moral, which obviously had an impact. Then different teachers or mentors that I had through my life have a big influence. I've always argued with friends, so they've never been a big influence on my morality, but yeah, I would say like mentors or parents have had a big thing, or even like people I looked up to.
Okay. So real quick though, I want to just kind of dig apart something that you said right at the beginning, because you mentioned that your views are ever changing. Now, when you say that, do you mean your ideals as far as certain topics, you know, they're changing? Or do you actually mean your moral compass shifts, like it's ever, like you said, ever changing? Is that what you mean?
Well, let me give you an example, so you can sort of decide. So sure. I think growing up, I was very much everything anti-abortion.
Okay.
Right? And then I get into college and I'm faced with new information, then I am pro-choice.
Okay.
And now, looking back on it, I see it more situation to situation. And I definitely am more in the middle and split and have a much more difficult time with it. So my ideas on is this right or is this wrong has changed three times.
Okay.
In the past 3 decades.
Okay. So it is even questions surrounding morality and not just topical information, viewpoints on whether you agree with something or not, right? So that's
right.
Because that is a very good example of something that is a moral hot button, right? A hot topic. Josh, would you agree with Jake as far as where you got your standards of morality? Because I would even go so far to say that you probably don't agree with everything morally, right? Like as far as you and him. And you both raised in the same under the same roof. For everybody that doesn't know, that hasn't caught on already or wasn't listening to the show before in past seasons, et cetera, Josh and Jake are brothers, right? How many years apart?
Three years apart.
So
3 years.
Very, very close as far as time frame, right? Not like a generational gap or anything like that. So would you agree with where you got your moral compass?
I would say some of the general basis of things were, you know, those really young ages of being taught stuff by my parents. There was a lot of trial and error and putting my foot in my mouth where, like, I thought I had an opinion on something and, you know, went off on it. And then someone was like, oh, well, if you look at these facts, and it's like, oh, that's a good point, you know? And so things kind of got adjusted. Where I kind of agree with Jake where it's changing in a lot of ways. I mean, I would say that maybe if you were to pick out some of the more solid ones that those wouldn't have changed as much, but,
like murder is bad, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, but even that one, I feel like has changed because of my outlook on war has changed. And depending on how you look at war, it could be seen as murder.
Right. And that's, and I think me even poking the bear there, is me skipping ahead because we're going to get to those questions of, is it always murder? Is it always stealing? Is it always lying? Like, you know, all of those things that come down to moral, the moral fabric of how we build a society, that's going to change based on the circumstances, right? And I think that we're all going to agree, maybe not agree with each individual thing, but we will agree that situationally, it will change and adapt. It will have to adapt just based on human nature. So just to kind of give a little bit of background as far as mine goes, I think that morality, good and bad, is not only just taught or kind of adopted. I don't think it's something that's always just inherently around your upbringing. I think that we can agree that, you know, as children, as young adults, as grown adults, et cetera, we are influenced by new information, like Jake said, and, you know, our surroundings, things like that. And we constantly are kind of changing our views and using that information to, you know, take different stances. However, I do think that we as humans have an inherent moral compass that regardless of outside influence knows the difference between base, wrong, or right. I know that that's kind of like it's hard to even measure that, right? Because it's like, well, you can't take somebody that has no outside influence and test them and say, okay, well, this person, you know, do they have them? Like, do they know that killing somebody is morally wrong or right or et cetera, you know, based on their upbringing? but I think that it goes, it kind of goes a lot deeper, and maybe I will lose some people by going down this path. But I feel like your overall moral code, well, while you can excuse certain things that you do based on the circumstances, for instance, one of the scenarios that I will get to is, you know, say somebody breaks into your house and is threatening to, I don't know, steal something from your house, right? Or there's, mm-hmm. they're coming in to hurt you or hurt somebody in your family. And you choose to defend yourself. And this, the encounter is fatal. Like, I think that no matter how that plays out, whether or not you, it ends up in the person that was meaning you bodily harm ends up, passing away. I think that even if it is justified and righteous, I think that in your soul, it will leave like a shadow, right? Like it leaves like a, there's always going to be that lingering guilt. There's always going to be that you took another person's life, no matter what, et cetera, et cetera. Even if it was justified, even if you were acting to preserve your own life for somebody that you loved, right? So in that situation, morally wrong or right, I think that regardless of your upbringing or surroundings, your humanity knows that killing somebody else is wrong. Right, like that it feels wrong. It should, at least if you have some semblance of, you know, again, of a moral compass.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Josh.
No,
I'm struggling with that because you're saying that humans have that capacity. However, I mean, there's still certain like tribes in like the Amazon that are cannibalistic.
Sure.
And you're putting them up to the same moral compass as us because they're human. And you're saying they should act with remorse for the people they killed. And I don't think they are. They have the same remorse as a hunter would have for his kill. And even if you're saying humans, I mean, we can go back, you know, at least 3,000 years in written history and see that there are so many cultures that was not the case, that the preservation of human life was not like it is today. And then there was even further, if you go into, well, if they weren't in our family or they weren't in our race or they weren't whatever, that they're not technically us. So I feel like we have made a lot of progress when it comes to morality. And I would say that it is not inherently in us because we have moved forward. So I didn't, Josh, I don't know what you were ahead.
Yeah, I have a rebuttal for that, but we'll go to Josh first.
Well, what I was curious about is, if it's something that you feel like that we have in us, at what point does it start? Would you say that like we start recognizing it once we understand what death is? Because like, you know, if a child or something's playing with a gun and accidentally kills a friend, like it doesn't process with them that way because they don't understand even what death is at that point.
Right, sure,
they don't even
sure,
know sure. that it's wrong. I mean, kind of the same way that, like, you know, with my boys, they're 8 and 10, they will punch and hit each other. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing morally wrong with it. And I'm constantly having to go, like, because, like, me, I can feel that it is wrong for me to hit somebody. To just, if I were to walk up to someone in a grocery store and punch them, I know that I would feel wrong for doing that. And I'd probably feel like a sick feeling in my guts. Right. My kids don't have that towards each other. Like everything feels very justified with them.
Sure.
You know?
But I, so, I, yeah. And I think the answer to that is that comes with the same thing as of your psyche, your consciousness, your maturity. Like, as you mature and understand the world, as you understand consequences for actions, et cetera, et cetera, as I think that you kind of gain a broader understanding of what morality is, because as a kid, you only know cause and effect, et cetera. However, I would say that there is an inherent moral seed even before outside influence. For instance, a child knows that it's wrong to say, no, I didn't steal the cookies whenever he ate the whole pack, right? Like, why? Well, you can argue that, you know, the child was told that he would get in trouble if he took cookies, et cetera. There's all kinds of things that you could like go to, but there's been studies where they test a bunch of kids and they do all these different kinds of things to each one of them in different scenarios. Like, so give them a pack of cookies and give them a book, and then they leave them alone. And then if they have a cookie, they ask them, did they take a cookie? And then 9 times out of 10, they'll say no first and then say yes a second. Like, even though they weren't told yes, like, yes, they could have one, or yes, they couldn't, or no, they couldn't, they still will inherently say no because they think they're going to get in trouble first. Yeah. And so again, it's really hard to kind of do any kind of those kind of tests without outside influence already playing a part. However, I would argue that the child knows lying, being wrong, et cetera, and trying to get out of a situation to not quote unquote get in trouble. They know that inherently with, like, you know what I mean? Like, who teaches the child how to lie?
Well, right? That's kind of confusing because you said that they know that lying's wrong, but all the kids were lying. So obviously they thought that lying was a better option than telling the truth. So obviously they hadn't learned that lying was a worse thing to do than telling the truth and taking the punishment.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. If they're lying, they're obviously looking for a way around getting in trouble, right? Or get whatever the consequence might be, exactly. which then points to them, like, again, morally in our society, that is on the negative end of the spectrum, right? Lying, not telling the truth.
At least from that example and what Josh was saying about definitely his children, and I know Josh and I, when we were growing up, and I think that that's more evidence to it is learned and you grow out of it, and its morality is more of a societal thing. For example, the moralities in Korea to the moralities here in the Middle East, we all have very different cultures, different religions, different belief systems, different values that have created different morals.
Okay.
Now, you can argue that most of them say that killing is wrong. However, not all of them. And definitely not the same. I mean, for example, one of the a big motto in China, at least I heard this on a documentary, so I could be wrong, but it's something about it's best business is done in murky water. So it's just like never show all your cards type approach to business. And that's the opposite of what we sort of teach kids here in America, where we say, no, if you are as honest as possible, that's how you get further in life. And so I think it has that's not innately born in you. Those are taught. So it seems to me that it's your morality is taught and learned rather than inherently in you.
Okay. And I see where you're coming from. I think that ultimately, I mean, we definitely do not disagree with morality in general being a societal, it's society to society, right? Like, culture by culture, everybody has their own moral walls as far as like what's right and wrong and where that line is. The reason why I say that it is inherent is because of the similarities across the board. So you mentioned, like, okay, so there's tribes that are cannibals that still eat. I'm not as familiar with these tribes that are still eating people, whether or not they eat their own, their rival tribes, people that come in. I mean, I've seen the Green Inferno. So, you know, I think that in that case, it is more like catching a, you know, a hunter going out and hunting a deer, because they don't, there is not that outside, you know, culture to culture, other people exist in the world, you know, influence, right? However, I think that even within their own societal standards, I would be surprised if it was just okay for one of them to just knock somebody else's head off and eat them, you know, in the backyard, you know, of their tent or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, I would be surprised if it was that cut and dry, where it's literally just every man for himself. I can eat you. It's not going to be a big deal. You can eat me. Like, it is what it is. Like, there has to be, I would think, still some sort of rules and boundaries.
Well, and I could see there being rules and boundaries, but so what I was thinking when you were talking about it was the one thing that all people tend to have in common is a born innate desire for self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems like the morality is kind of what helps us, you know, stay alive. We're like in that kind of situation with the cannibals, where like, if you did not have rules or things set up and people were just killing people all the time, like, you would constantly be looking over your shoulder, not knowing when you were going to die and be eaten. So your morality and the rules that you follow are to be able to keep the peace and to be able to survive, rather than a right or wrong thing. It's more, hey, don't rock the boat, because I would like to continue living.
But that's also ultimately where the right or wrong comes in there, right? And the reason why I said that I think that it's more innate because of the similarities is because in general, you know, most cultures, places would agree that you, if you just go outside and shoot the guy next to you or kill the guy next to you, that's wrong. There's going to be consequences. There's going to be some sort of negative after effects, as well as I would think too, that at the end of the day, like, you're going to know it. Like, if there's a reason why you as an adult go, I can't go punch that person. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's 100% just, okay, well, in our today's society, you can't punch people. That's, you know what I mean? Like, it just, it feels wrong no matter what kind of person you are, even unless they're like, there's something mentally wrong with them and, you know, a serial killer, et cetera. We can go way down the bunny trail there. But if you're a functioning person in society, you know that if you go up to somebody and punch them, or you go up to somebody and cut them with a knife, like, that's wrong. You're going to know, yeah, that it's wrong. Okay. So,
but there are still tons of gangs that do drive-bys every single day. And it's not these, you know, extreme outliers. Like, there's giant cartels.
Sure, but I don't think that they, I don't think that they're excluded from that. I think that they, even when they do it, they know that it's wrong. I think that there's a fine line when you can kind of gloss over. And once you pass that moral compass, it's like, it doesn't matter that it's wrong, right? Because you're already there. You're doing a million and one other things that you know in society are wrong, but you don't care because either you have to stay alive, or the reward is it outweighs the guilt, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whatever it might be. I don't think that that really matters.
Can I bring let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Because you mentioned before that you thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you said your neighbors would know if they were having an argument that they shouldn't shoot each other, right?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Well, we used to do that here in America. They would have duels. It was totally legal, totally fine. Like, if you had a disagreement with somebody, like, oh my goodness, you stole one of my chickens. You can duel them to the death. And now we'd say, no, nobody should be allowed to do that. So obviously there was a different value put on life.
Correct.
And if we can go back even further, I mean, the gladiators were so popular because people wanted to see other people kill each other. People wanted to see people fight to the death.
Right. But I think we're separating societal norms from what is morally incorrect. And I think that that's my point of like when we're going to get to the scenarios, because, all right, so say you're a gladiator and you get put in the ring and you're like, all right, it's a 1v1. You either kill this guy or you die. Like, you're going to kill the guy. Like, it's preservation of self, like Josh said. So in that situation, the morality isn't that morality doesn't really come into it. That's more of like a fight or flight. That is me or you. That's, you know, I'm going to kill you if that's what it takes, right, to live. And I think that that's really so when back in the West, you know, and whenever we were frontiering and, you know, all of that, and it was a duel to the death, like, that's not so much a case of morally wrong or right. That was in society. It was okay to duel somebody over a stolen chicken. And if you killed them, that was fine because he stole your chicken. And it wasn't a case of, well, that was wrong or right. Even though I would argue that if you killed somebody, even back then, that again, it would leave that heaviness. And we see that in today's society with people that do, like you were saying, that do go to war, or, you know, people that have had to shoot people in the line of duty, you know, law enforcement, et cetera. There is lasting effects to taking another person's life, whether it was justified or not. And I think that speaks more to the fact that our morality compass, whether it's affected or influenced or not, ultimately there are those similarities that are inherent. And taking somebody's life is one that is mainly universal. And that would be my argument.
Yeah. So I guess let me ask, how do you think it would change if, for example, imagine somebody coming back from the Vietnam War and they're seeing protests and they're being called a murderer and all this horrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or think about like the Spartans coming back from a battle and everybody in their city cheering them and saying that they're amazing and that they're so proud of them for doing that. Do you think that those people's psyche would be different? And I think society has a much bigger hold on what they saw as the right thing to do in those situations.
I do think that it would be different. However, and obviously, you know, we weren't alive back then. We only know from stories and books and, you know, just written documents, et cetera, that you know, for instance, you know, Greek mythology, the soldiers and wanting to cross over, right, into the afterlife, wanting to die a warrior's mm-hmm. death and things like that. And even in like North mythology, they believe that even if their enemies, right, died in battle, they killed their enemy, they believe that they would drink with them again. Like, they would see them again. So like there's a fine line between, again, this justified killing, right?
Right.
And cold-blooded murder. And there's always a justification for, or not a justification, a consequence of, like, if you murder your brother in cold blood, or not your brother, your neighbor in cold blood, like, there's a special place in hell for you, or wherever, whatever the equivalent of heaven and hell is in that society, right? It's completely different than the Spartans going to war, or the U.S. Navy, you know, going to war, et cetera, whatever it might be. But I think that that is a very large difference between a societally accepted killing and murder in cold blood, right or wrong, right?
Yeah.
I think. But also, before we get into scenarios, because this is exactly what I wanted to get to, because we have this general understanding of morality and how it's being built. But my belief in it being inherent, at least to a point, right? Just like your moral fiber and your being that knows wrong from right, et cetera. I 100% believe that it is influenced by your culture, by your surroundings, your upbringing, et cetera. But I think it has a lot to do with what you choose to believe as a whole, right? Whether you choose to believe that we're here for a reason, whether you choose to believe that we were created, whether you choose to believe that we spawned out of a single cell organism and that it's just all happenstance to be here. I think that your fundamental beliefs of the world, of people, of humanity, of morality, ultimately comes down to what you what you believe in as far as the reason we're all here. And as far as Christianity goes, you guys know, being raised somewhat similarly to me. So the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, there was no quote unquote bad or good, right? There was no sin in the world. When they were created, everything was good. There was just one rule. You couldn't eat of the tree, right? You couldn't eat of the tree of good or evil. Do you know what God said to Adam and Eve, if they did, what was going to happen?
What was it? They were going to be given the knowledge.
So,
it right. was apple or tree of wisdom, right?
It was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, basically. So mm-hmm. if they ate it, that was the moral wake up. But the consequence was they would die. So basically that defined their humanity. They realized morality, but they also then became mortal at the same time, right? They mm-hmm. were going to die. So blah blah blah, long story short, the devil convinces Eve to eat of the tree, then she gives it to Adam, etc., blah blah blah. So all of a sudden God comes knocking, trying to find Adam and Eve. What do Adam and Eve do?
They hide.
They hide from God. Why? Because both of them were ashamed, mm-hmm. right? So both of them, they ate of the tree. They instantly had the knowledge that it was wrong because they were told not to do it. And then they did it. And then God said, hey, where are you at? Even though he knew where they were, blah, 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 right? So
yeah.
End of the day, they felt shame before they knew what shame was. There was no outside influence. There was no people to kind of, you know, okay, well, if I lie, I probably should feel bad about it. I should probably want to hide. They hid from God because they felt shame. Now, mm-hmm. obviously, this is very, very, this all hinges on what you believe. Do you believe in creation? Do you believe in Adam and Eve being the first two people on the earth? I mean, if you do, then, all right, then the next question is, do you believe in the story, right? You believe in everything that's been documented since then. If you don't, that doesn't matter. Then that's a completely other conversation that we have to figure out where your point of morality comes from. But that was my throwback to why I was saying that I believe that it's inherent, is because if we go back to the first two people on the earth, they inherently felt shame without any outside influence. They inherently lied without knowing what lying was.
I'm confused, and hopefully you can help clarify this for me. Mm-hmm. So, sure. The fruit was, they would know good and evil, right?
Yes, but so basically, think of it like it was like a moral apple.
Okay, so they eat it, then they know good and evil. So the outside source would be the apple.
Okay.
So you said there's no outside source because there was no society, but no, they learned that from the apple, from eating it.
Yeah, but the apple is not a person, right? That's my point, though, is that.
But it's an outside thing. It's not coming from within.
That's the source, though, right? That's the moral. Right. That is the moral. That's the moral code.
Right.
That is the moral source compass.
Is external, not internal. That was my argument.
But it's internal. From that point forward, right?
Okay.
Because if they're the first two people, they don't have kids yet. Like, it's internal. Like, as soon as Eve ate the apple and gave it to Adam, both of them had the knowledge of what is right, what is wrong. That's their internal yes, no, this is bad, this is good.
Okay. Right?
Mm-hmm. So then, whenever Adam and Eve's son killed their brother later in life, right? Mm-hmm. He immediately felt shame. He immediately knew that murder was wrong. He immediately ran away because he knew it was wrong. That was the first murder ever committed in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this ultimately hinges on whether or not you believe that actually happened, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's fine. But that is where I was getting my...
Right.
There is a moral compass inherently in us from the start, so, from as a child.
So I heard an argument similar to yours. So I don't know if you knew Jordan Peterson and I just read a book from him.
Sam?
Yeah, Sam Harris had a three-day debate, basically. So three different nights. Basically on sort of about religion, or at least like where do we get our morality from? And Jordan Peterson was definitely taking more of your stance, but it was more like we got our morality from being in a Anglo-Christian background.
Sure.
So, but that's still coming from the culture, not necessarily coming from that exact, I'm not denying that we don't have some inherent, morality, but I think Josh had a really good point when he was saying that it's self-preservation. And, furthermore, as for spreading your seed, right? Like if you go and right now, if you go and kill somebody and go to jail, you cannot have kids, right? Like it would be much more difficult.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are, if we are thinking about continuing our lineage, breaking the laws usually doesn't help that. However, in some places where it is better to be, if you think you can get further in life, if you do steal, you do cheat, you do kill, then you're going to do that to not only to keep yourself safe, but also to hopefully have offspring, right?
Have offspring. Yeah. So, I mean, I see that, but I don't think that, I mean, ultimately I think that's a causal, that's an after effect, right? Like that's a benefit, but I don't think that's a driving.
Well, I mean, force. So I guess I'm a little confused because you said that you did agree with Josh about that. We do
self-preservation,
right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And we do things like that. So if we have that innately in us, wouldn't that give us some sort of thing what we say is right and wrong as long as it keeps us alive?
You mean, I was saying I don't think that that's a driving force as far as wanting to have kids or needing to have offspring. That's what
right,
I was talking
right.
about.
Well, I guess I just opened it up to the animal world. But
oh, okay.
We're, yeah. I believe we are an animal, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, humans are definitely an animal. We act like animals most of the time. I think that at the end of the day, though, we were given a consciousness above the animals. We were given dominion, over the animal kingdom in general.
Right. And that's, but that's your opinion.
Of course, no. Yeah. I mean, it is my opinion, but I also think that, I think that it's also very, I think that it can be very easily documented. I mean, there is no, I mean, you can argue that there are predators on the planet with the ability to take down a human in hand-to-hand combat, mm-hmm. but there is no greater apex predator with a comprehensive problem-solving brain than the human.
So
like that's just fact.
I want to make sure we stay on topic because I do love that conversation. And anytime you want to have that conversation with me, I would love to go down that. But I am afraid that we're going to dive first from morality.
We'll
save that for another time.
We'll definitely.
I think we may disagree a little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, our VIP guest will be back on another episode where we discuss sharks or men. Well, who will come out on top?
Yeah. What came first, the egg or the chicken? You know? obviously but anyways, neither. Okay, go ahead.
Obviously neither, yeah. So getting back to the moral foundations, right? So yeah, now you kind of see where I'm coming from as far as like inherent, and I'm glad that we can kind of at least find some common ground there with there, even if it's just some semblance of a moral compass inherently like whether or not it's outside influence and that's really what expands, that's fine. I can agree with that. I can actually get there with you. I just, my point of view remains that I think that we're inherently, we have a semblance of right or wrong, whether it be very, very muddy or not, whether it be undeveloped or not, I think it's there. And I think that for the people that don't have one or seem to ignore it, there's either extenuating circumstances that happen during their upbringing, their life, et cetera, that changes, that completely changes their worldview and sense of morality, which does happen, or just like any other mental illness, or, you know, they're born without something. They're born without some sort of chromosome, whatever it might be. I guess chromosome's probably not the right thing. But you know what I mean? Like something's missing. There's a switch that's crossed, or there's not, you know, the wires kind of aren't connecting in some place. In order for them to be missing something as base as like, well, I'm going to murder 20 women from all over the country and I'm not going to feel a thing. You know, like something is missing there. Something's off. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to transition to what I was wanted to get to. And that was kind of what stemmed out of our discussion last week. So, you know, we're talking about the coronavirus and its extenuating circumstances. One of the things that I brought up was, you know, you guys, where you live, you have a farm-ish, right? You have, you're raising chickens, your parents have crops, as it were, whether it's fruit and vegetables, even a little bit. You have something a little bit more than just your homestead to protect as far as your family, you know, your extended family and household, right? So now you all of a sudden you have a commodity that is useful for survival. So in a society or a pandemic or an apocalyptic situation, all of a sudden you're now no longer just protecting yourselves and your family, but you're protecting your livelihood because you have something that other people may want. Now, your moral code as far as protecting what is yours and what that means for your own survival, right? Preservation of self. Let's talk about how that changes in extenuating circumstances. For instance, right now, if somebody walked onto your property and took a machete to all of your crops, on a scale of 1 to 10, how quickly would you shoot that person?
Yeah, it'd be pretty quick.
You think? Right now, today. You think you'd shoot them?
No, today?
Yeah. In our society today, knowing you can go down the street to go to the grocery store and get food as easily as you possibly can.
I'd be a little freaked out. I may shoot somebody. If someone's just walking through my backyard with a machete, just cutting shit down.
Take the machete out. Say somebody walks onto your property
and just picking fruits and vegetables or whatever.
Yeah, picking your crops.
No, I would not shoot them. I would yell at them to bugger off.
Okay. So, Jake, what do you think? Same thing? You would just be super confused, perturbed, mad, angry, right?
Definitely very confused.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will be a violent altercation, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can agree that right now with the resources as it is, like you can go to the store, you can get food, you can, you know, you're not starving, you know, you don't rely on those crops for your livelihood. Fast forward, this pandemic is 10 times worse. There is no food. Grocery stores are empty. Everybody is in their houses. They're trying to grow food. They're trying to scavenge, et cetera, et cetera. You have walls up around your property to keep people out because you don't want people to know that you have food there. Somebody comes over the fence into your property and is taking your food. In this situation, right, where your food is your livelihood to keep your family alive and safe and preservation of self and loved ones, right, comes into – what are the odds that that becomes violent?
Oh, much higher.
Jake, would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so at what point, right, where – And this is, I guess, the crux of the matter. And as far as where this is going to go down this path is, where does the moral compass start to shift from right and wrong to that societal, like, well, it was wrong before because society said I couldn't, but now there's no laws and now I have to survive. So it's just more about preservation of self.
I would think, so in my situation, like, let's say that I was that person on the outside. Mm-hmm. My initial thought would be to try to have a conversation with someone that has something that I do not have and working out some kind of deal, you know, whatever it may be, whether they want money or, you know, a trade, a barter system or something like that to be able to get it. To be able to be pushed to the point of stealing from my neighbor so I can have something, you know, that's ultimately going to end up hurting them, like, and is only really going to be a temporary fix for my situation, just is all around bad. So, like, going down that path, I think it's just a bad idea on top of bad ideas to ever get to that point, basically. Like, even in apocalyptic standards, like, you would hope that, like, my neighbors in my neighborhood, that I'm still able to have decent conversations with them. I mean, I could see if someone's trying to loot their thing every day and they're like, I'm not freaking talking to anyone, then I may go about things differently, but I'm probably still not going to go through trying to steal from my neighbor.
Okay, this is why you won't survive. Jake, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think even in the state that we're in now, we still technically have it really good. I mean,
yeah.
grocery stores are still open.
100%.
Like, it takes a lot for Josh and I to actually be confrontational. And I like to think that if we were actually in a fight or flight, like, crazy situation of where, all right, this is our only lifeline, right, that things would be different. I mean, for example, I'm pretty sure if somebody was trying to steal Kaysen's medicine, Josh would be much quicker to resort to violence.
Okay.
And I think I would be the same thing. If it is going to not necessarily hurt me, but hurt the people I care about, I'm much more likely to go to violence quicker. Like, what'd you say about my girlfriend? And then, boom, you punch them.
Right.
Right. So, but they can say whatever they want about me.
And I agree. And that's kind of but that still lingers my question of where, at what point is that, are we just saying that, like, as soon as it becomes personal about something you care about, then things change? Or, like,
I think when it's actually affecting the quality of life, like, to an extent that it could cost somebody else's life. For example, an inconvenience, like, if somebody stole my car,
yeah,
I don't have a car right now, but if somebody stole my car, I'd be really angry. But it's an inconvenience, even though, you know, it's very valuable and things like that. But if somebody poisoned my water at our house, that's totally different. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And I understand what you're saying. It's just interesting because, all right, so I agree with you in the way that it becomes much more serious when it's somebody, or it's affecting somebody that I care about more so than when it affects me. But also, ultimately, it depends on the situation and whether or not that is life altering. The outcome is life altering or life ending, right? And that's really where the morality kind of gets thrown out the window. But there's always two sides to this, right? So what if the person that jumps over your fence and is stealing your crops has a sick son of their own down the street, and they just ran out of food, and he needs that food to keep his son alive. But you also need that food to keep your son and your family alive. So from his point of view, your food is the only way that he can keep his son alive. And it's the same from your point of view. Only the only ground here is that it's yours to begin with, not his. So he's stealing, but in his eyes, he's stealing because morality doesn't matter. It's preservation of himself and somebody he cares about. It's life altering. Like, he has to get the food one way or the other. He doesn't want to knock on your door because there's a potential, like, you just get shot on sight, or you're just going to say no anyway. So his only shot at success in his mind maybe is, maybe I can get in and get out without them seeing. Unfortunately, he gets seen, caught, whatever. Now all of a sudden you're dealing with a moral obligation of, like, this person, like, do you let them go? Do you say, get out of here, don't come back, with the chance of that he's just going to come back possibly with maybe more people and they're just going to overrun you? Or do you just put him down and be like, that's that, it's me or them?
Like, yeah, and I mean, that's the problem with any kind of burglary or robbery, you know, like, they don't ever say, hey, I'm just here to raid your medicine cabinet. I just need some, you know, drugs or whatever. And then, like, I'll be out of your hair. You know, like, if they did, I'm sure a lot of people would be like, you know what, fuck it. Take my shit, go, whatever. I don't want to have to deal with this stuff. You know, they're not going to put up a fight on it. But when someone's physically breaking a window, coming into your house, oh, your mind only goes to the worst. It's only a, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my family? Does this guy want to murder me? You know, is it a Silence of the Lambs type thing? Or is this person just high on drugs and maybe they need 20 freaking dollars or something? You know, whatever. Your mind is only going to that one place, and that's a self-preservation because I think someone's trying to hurt me. Where if you're able to have a conversation, I would hope in most situations you would be able to work it out. I mean, that's why I feel like there's a very big difference. If I'm walking down the street and I had a gun on me and I see someone break a window of my car, get in it and drive off, I'm not going to shoot them. I'm not going to shoot someone over stealing my car. Like Jake said, that's an inconvenience. Mm-hmm. Someone breaks a window and kicks in my front door and I'm there in the living room, I'm most likely going to shoot them because I don't know what they're after. With my car, I know what they're after. They're after my car. They're just going to take that. They're not going to hurt me. They're not going, where's the owner of this car? I'm going to go beat the shit out of them. You know?
Yeah.
They just care about getting the car, getting out of there, selling the car for parts, getting the money. Someone breaks into my house, I don't know what they want. You know, someone is snooping around outside my house and we're in a bigger pandemic and scarier situation. I don't know who they are, what they are, what they want. But hopefully if I was able to have a conversation with somebody, you know, you could come to some type of arrangement or work out something to be able to help out the situation. But I don't know. It's so hard to put myself in that place of having to steal from somebody. I could understand much easier. So I actually have a really good example of this.
Okay.
Forgot about this. I think it was during Kaysen's first month of treatment. The insurance was getting all worked out. They were still having some issues. There was paperwork being moved around. They were supposed to be taking care of different prescriptions. And we typically use one pharmacy for our prescriptions. They did not have the prescription that we needed, so they sent it to a different pharmacy. So I drive over to that other pharmacy, and now they're telling me that the insurance isn't paying for it there or whatever. It was Kaysen's chemotherapy medicine. I was 2 seconds from running out the door with it in my hand. Like, I was like, I don't give a shit. Like, what you say, oh, on this thing. Like, but it felt very different from me one, because it was so new, the danger that he was in and how serious the situation was, and the other, it being a very big company. Like, if there was a dad and his kid that had that same medicine standing next to me, I don't think that I would be able to shove that dad and kid down and grab that medicine and run out the door. I don't think I have that in me. I would try and try and try and try to find another way to fix that situation. But just because it was a pharmacy and they were like, your insurance isn't paying for this medicine, I was like, man, see ya.
So, like, so then my question is, so then is morality, is your overall view of morality very dependent on whether or not you can see the consequences of what your action is?
It's more to do with punk music and screw the system.
Screw the system.
System of the day.
But like, that's my point, though.
Like, I feel like it does, you know, being able to put a face to something, see somebody and dealing with a person. Like I said, there's no way I would be able to steal the medicine out of another kid's hands to give to my kid. I would figure out another way, or I would die trying. But I would not be able to do that.
But what if the literal outcome was you either steal the medicine for your child or your child dies?
Yeah, I know. Like, in that kind of situation.
That's the question. Now, that is the question. Yeah. You either steal from this kid and that guy's son dies, or you steal it and your son lives.
All right, Jack, that's a hard question. How about you answer that one first? Let us know what you think. So,
okay.
All right. So this, I'm going to give it to you this way. All okay. Right.
Hit me.
All right. So somebody has a gun pointed at your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if you don't go to three of your neighbors and shoot their dogs, I'm going to shoot your dog.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to do it. I know, Jack.
I thought you were giving me a hard about question.
Your dog. Oh, sorry.
You're giving me a hard question.
Sorry.
I don't care about my dog.
You could just go over and just shoot other people. They may have that same connection with their dog that you have with your dog.
I do. That's correct.
And you are robbing people of that. Not just one person, but three people.
First of all, let's just hope that situation never comes.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm glad you give us this caveat after you put Josh and I through all these questions. All right. Yeah, no, obviously it's impossible to tell. So, you know the experiment with the train, right?
Which one are we talking about?
So, basically, you're in control of whether the train track goes to the left or to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to the left is, there is one person standing. Okay. And to the right, there are 10 people. Mm-hmm. Now, the train naturally is just going to go to the right. So you have to physically move the lever to make the train go to the left. And this experiment was actually done on mm-hmm. people. It obviously it was done kind of remotely so that there was nobody that could actually get hurt with it. But they did test what people did, and the majority of people decided not to do anything.
Right, like, and let it hit the 10 people.
Right, because if they didn't do anything, then they wouldn't feel responsible for the 10 people dying, even though they could save technically 9 people. So, I mean, we can talk as much as we want, but we have no idea how, if you are in that moment, how we're going to react. I mean, we always hope for the best.
Yeah, right. I would hope that I would make the right decision. And I mean, no matter what, like, okay, so so the Captain America, you know, we don't sacrifice lives, right? That's his big thing, right? Well, they ended up sacrificing all kinds of lives, and he was a big hypocrite because a lot of people still died. But the point is that it's like the captain going down with the ship. It's the person's put in charge. They have to make the hard decisions. You make the hard decision. If it's possible to save everybody, you save everybody. But if it's literally physically not possible, and there's 10 people that are going to lose their life over one person that's going to lose their life, it's numbers, right? It's a numbers game. Like, and you have to be able to make that decision. So, I mean, I would hope that I would do the right thing in that situation and not just let it happen and say, well, I didn't do anything, so it was out of my hands. Because it wasn't, if you do have the choice to like change it, right? If it's in your hands, you can affect the outcome. Obviously, again, we're hoping that we have already exhausted every option for, saving everybody involved, whatever the situation is. And to go back to what you were saying, like, would I be able to go to three of my neighbors and shoot their dogs? Probably not. I don't think I could look at a dog and shoot it. I would.
It's John a horrible Wick situation, right?
I would John Wick it somehow, and the guy that was going to shoot my dog would actually die, and yeah, it would be fine.
Whoa. Okay. Well, that's back to step one. Yeah. All right. So you just put that man's life below your dog's.
Oh, 100%.
So, okay, this is interesting. You've changed everything. I thought we had dominion over animals, but apparently that person doesn't count as a person to you.
We do. We do have dominion over, well, that's, over the animals.
Again, that's your opinion. But, yes.
Oh, I can't wait for that one. But I mean, that's, I would put the same emphasis on whether it was my dog or my relative, whatever it is. Like, if it's something that you care about, somebody that you care about, like, I would, first of all, I would hopefully want to switch. Like, if it was one of my relatives, whatever it might be, I would try to switch with them, right? Save them, okay. Take me, save them, right? That's first choice.
So let me make this more specific so that I guess I can get a clear understanding of what exactly I'm looking for here. So if a man comes into your house to rob your house,
yes,
he shoots all of your pets, all of them. Yeah. They were looking at him funny. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. So then you go all John Wick on him.
Yes.
So are you saying that you would have the same, you would have remorse for doing that because morally you know it's wrong to kill? Or it's like, this is so justified, I don't feel any remorse to that. I just feel like I should have been there to protect my pets. Like,
oh, yeah. No, I think that there's a lot of things that happens. I mean, there's going to be a lot of grief in that situation. And even like in the moment, I think that it would be a lot of shock. Like, say I walk out and for some reason I didn't hear, like, or maybe he didn't use a gun, I don't know, or whatever, and he murdered my pets. And I find him and I have a gun, he doesn't, and he's cracked out, whatever it might be. I would be in probably a state of grief and shock that in that moment I probably wouldn't feel anything at all. But I would definitely, the whole situation would be so awful that I would definitely feel terrible about not only not being able to prevent it, but then the loss of life on both ends, because I didn't, at that point, I wouldn't know anything about that person. I wouldn't know why he was there. Was he on drugs? Was, cause it would just be, I think it would be more of like a gut reaction to that all happening. And then thinking like, oh, well, am I next? Like, are you here to murder all of them and then me? So then like, I'm going to protect myself. And yeah, I mean, I definitely think that I would still feel that stain, like I was talking about before, that shadow of guilt. No matter what, if he told you,
I'm going to kill you,
I would still feel that way.
Okay,
even if I killed him in self defense, just because, again, like, you, like, there would be so many unanswered questions, right? It's not like you're sitting down, you're having a full-on dissertation with this person, and you talk with for an hour and you find out his life story and why he's here, and then at the end he's like, yeah, and I'm still gonna kill you, and then you shoot him. It's like, well, okay, now I know that you were just this and you just actually wanted to die because you had terminal cancer and you just wanted to go out with a bang. I don't know, whatever it might be, but the point is that I definitely would still feel a lot of weight, even if it was in self-defense. And I think that that's I think that that's where the attachment to the morality to your soul comes into play, because the people that can kill without remorse, without feeling, without having any sort of that shadow or guilt, I don't think it's attached to their soul. I think that they're so detached themselves from their own reality or their own, maybe they just don't have a compass at all. But I think that there's definitely a detachment there that happens if you don't have that empathy, right? Empathy is a very human thing to feel in that way. And it's interesting, and I don't know. It's hard for me to say because obviously I've never been in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, this is all hypothetical. None of us have killed anybody yet.
That you know of.
Not admitting on this podcast.
No, I'm kidding, of course. But it's just in general, you know, it's tough because not only is it hypothetical, but it's also very situational, right? Like if somebody came in to steal my TV, it would be very different. Like you were saying, it's more of an inconvenience than it's life-threatening. It's very different for them, somebody to bust through my door, try to steal my flat-screen television, than it is for them to bust through my door with a knife or a gun and like try to hurt me or hurt my, you know, somebody that I care about, right? Like it's a very different situation. Or even like getting mugged, you know, like maybe you're walking down the street or maybe I'm riding my bike and like I might get jumped and like they might only want money because they need, you know, who knows? Like, who knows? Maybe they need drugs. Maybe they need money, or maybe like they have to pay rent and they're like desperate. You know, they're going to be thrown out on the street. I don't know. That's a lot different than being like shot at in a drive-by, like in a gang shooting or, you know, whatever that, you know, whatever it might be. One is inconvenient. The other is life-threatening.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where the moral compass kind of changes. And I think that at the end of the day, Josh, I think that if you had to choose to steal medicine to save Kaysen, you would do it even if you knew that somebody else's kid or whoever that needed the medicine.
That's saying it's a very different situation, even if it were, I steal it from the pharmacy, but that family was coming to pick it up later on that day. And because it's not there because I stole it and now their kid dies, that's a very different situation than literally, you know, a little kid standing there and me taking the medicine from his hands.
I think,
and there's a million steps in between that there could
be. I think that at the end of the day, though, I think that you would make that decision, even if it meant that you yourself would bear the guilt of it for the rest of your life, because it meant the preservation of somebody that you cared about.
I would have to kill the kid, his dad, probably his mom, and all family members so that
they don't
anyone that misses them or was sad because they were gone. I would just get rid of them too, so they wouldn't be sad.
Now you're just a
Josh with the big heart.
Yeah, I have to kill you because I care so much.
Yeah.
Don't want you to be sad.
Yeah,
but that's. I think that at the end of the day, your preservation of self goes even past you when it comes to your children or people that you care about. Like that's the whole.
Oh, it's much more for the people I care about than it is
take.
For
Let me take their place. You know, save them, take me, kind of thing. And I think that's. That's ultimately where it would end up going, even if it meant that you had to morally do something that compromised what you believed. Like that's bottom line, because if it meant that he lived and you had to live with the guilt or whatever, and you would do that because it meant that the person that you cared about, you know, your son was safe.
Yeah.
So I wanted to reference real quick. So there's a movie that came out a long time ago. It's really bad. It had the guy who plays Cyclops in it, James Marsden, I think.
The Passion of Christ?
No, that wasn't. That was
just kidding. Sorry.
That was Jim Caviezel. Or Caviezel. Or I don't know, whatever his name is. It had James Marsden. And maybe I want to say, what's her face from Charlie's Angels and The Mask? Cameron Diaz. I think it maybe had the two of them. Anyways. Long story short, there was this, I think it was called The Box.
The Box.
Yeah, you remember
I thought you were going to say. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So how it works is, you know, it ended up being really, really stupid in the end, but the general premise was there was a box with a button, and the idea was is that you were given the button the day before. You had 24 hours to decide whether you wanted to push it. If you pushed it, you got like, what, $5 million or $10 million or something like that deposited into your account, some sort of absorbent amount of money. The only caveat is if you did push it, somebody in the world died. Like, you didn't know who it was. You didn't know if they were good or bad. Just somebody dies. All right. And so that's the dilemma. You're given either a lot of money. It's nobody that you know, like specifically is going to die, but it's just somebody. That's just the way it works. Or you could just not push it and pass. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was the moral dilemma. You have people that are struggling, need money, et cetera, you know, and then the more people with no moral compass or a very weak one are like, if it's nobody, it could be anybody. It could be a criminal. It could be, you know, somebody who knows. It doesn't matter. The caveat was that it was every time somebody pushed it, somebody else that had pushed it died, I think was the pool of people that they were choosing from or something like that. I think that's how it ended up playing out. And then it ended up being aliens in the end too. It was super weird, but they were like performing some sort of social experiment.
Yeah.
But I think that it was like, if you did push it, a person that died had also pushed it, and they were just basically like killing in a circle.
Yeah.
That or whatever. Sense. I think, but that's the question though, right? Is that if you didn't know who it was, your morality is very cloudy because you don't have to see it. You even admitted it yourself that if you didn't have to see the family and it was just the drugs on the counter for your kid, like it's a lot easier to grab it and be like, yeah, I need it, than it is to look at it and have to like snatch it from the kid and dad's hands at gunpoint because you know that your kid needs it. Like it's a very, very different situation. Why do you think that is?
I mean, it's a tough one. So, there's actually a similar thought experiment to this one. That's, man, it's tough. So, okay, imagine you are walking home, okay? And on your way home, there is like a pond or a lake. Now, I don't know exactly what you have to wear when you go to work, but I assume you have your phone in your pocket and maybe some nice shoes, you know, work clothes and things like that, maybe a watch. But you see a kid drowning in the lake.
Right.
So you instantly, well, let me ask you, what do you do in that situation?
I mean, you go in. You go in.
You go in and you know what? If your phone, you take it out of your pocket too fast and it breaks on the ground, so be it, right? Yeah, it's a phone. Right. This is a life.
Yeah.
So that's like maybe $100. I don't know what kind of discount you have, but I'm guessing like $100, right? So why don't we send $100 to Africa to the millions of kids that are starving? It's because it's not in our face. We don't see it. It's not that person that's right in front of us, even though those kids are dying every single day. You know what I mean?
I do. And I think that there's more to it than that. I don't think it's just black and white. I think that's very circumstantial. Like,
right.
Yeah, maybe $100 to replace my phone isn't that much in the grand scheme of things if I had to jump in the lake and save that person. But like, for me, that $100 is a big deal in general. Like I couldn't just see a kid on the side of the road and be like, here's $100. Right. Like that's not financially, like that's not
every time someone needed it.
So, right. But what if it is, okay, there is a village of kids, right, who need medicine. Mm-hmm. Now $100 covers medicine for the entire village. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's like those commercials where it's like 50 cents can feed this kid for,
that's less you know, than a cup of coffee.
Right. Well, it can feed this kid for this amount of time. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, 50 cents is not a big deal.
Right.
To us.
Sure.
However, we don't donate every time that commercial comes
on. Do you want to know why?
Because you don't trust the commercial?
Well, that's part of it. It goes along with not being face-to-face because – so say I call up the number and I say, oh, I want to donate my 50 cents a day or a month or whatever it is to help this starving kid in Africa. And they're like, okay, cool. And I sign up. Not only do I not know exactly where that's going.
Well, they send the picture of the kid.
Okay. Yeah, I can print off one from the internet right now.
Well, I mean, I have friends that work in EduKenya, which is like it's an educational thing in Kenya and mm-hmm. helps these small villages. So I do know that if I was donating to certain things, where my money would be going. So if you had more assurance where your money would be going, you still have to make that decision. And I would say it's still really difficult because it's not right in front of you.
And you're right. You're absolutely right. I just think that, again, it's not as cut and dry because there are other circumstances. If I could give and give directly to somebody that needed the help, but then that would go back to it being right in my face. And that would be the why I'd be doing it. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think so in that study though, I mean, in general, people would go save the kid, right? Like that's the general answer mm-hmm. is that you go save the kid. Is that right?
Yeah. As far as I understand, I mean, it's a thought experiment. So it's supposed to be subjective for each person to come with their own solution. But
that also goes to the parable, right? The parable of the guy in the ditch. It's the same thing. So, right. I think that was, that was a biblical parable as well. Guy's in the side of the road, you know, looks homeless, basically beat up. He was mugged on the road.
Oh, the Good Samaritan. That's
correct. Correct.
Yeah.
So the first, the groups of people
did that experiment as well, with preachers who were, well, I guess they were at a theology college and they were studying to be a preacher, and they were talking to them and said, okay, now you have to go across the hall. You have 5 minutes to get over there to this other building and then give a speech on what it means to be moral or what it means to be a Good Samaritan. And they walk by a homeless person who is asking for help. Mm-hmm. None of them stopped. And I was like, oh my goodness. I'm sure everybody's definitely going to listen to your speech now, but I don't know.
For those that aren't familiar with the Good Samaritan parable, right? So the idea is the guy was left for dead, beat up, et cetera, dirty, looks homeless on the side of the road. You have the villagers walking by, you know, they kind of like peer down at him, but they don't stop to help. You have the town, like mayor, whatever, he kind of like is looking from afar, but keeps walking. You have the town, the priest, or in this case, the rabbi, literally crossing to the other side of the road to not even be anywhere closer to him so that he can out of sight, out of mind, like we were just mm-hmm. talking about, right? He doesn't even have the option to help him because he's not next to him. He can't see him. And then you have the one person that comes by, you know, takes him, cleans him up, fixes him up, gives them a bed, food, et cetera, et cetera. Which person are you in that scenario? And I think that has a large tells a lot about where you are, like where your moral compass is to an extent, right? Because I think that it is in today's day and age, it's easy to get not only bamboozled, but this is a can of worms that you can open up, and there's just so many people that take advantage of the system, et cetera, whatever it might be. However, you know, are you the Good Samaritan? Are you the rabbi? Are you the mayor? Are you the townsperson? Like which one do you relate with more, right, in that situation?
So I actually had an example. A friend posted this morning, and I thought it would go perfectly with what we were discussing tonight. So I think it may be something for us to kind of look at inside ourselves and a good note to kind of leave on, but you tell me.
All right.
So this is called the shopping cart theory. Are you familiar with this?
I am not.
So the shopping cart is the ultimate litmus test for whether a person is capable of self-governing. To return the shopping cart is an easy, convenient task, one which we all recognize as the correct and appropriate thing to do. To return the shopping cart is objectively right. there are no situations other than dire emergencies in which a person is not able to return their cart. Simultaneously, it is not illegal to abandon your shopping cart. Therefore, the shopping cart presents itself as the apex example of whether a person will do what is right without being forced to do it. No one will punish you for not returning your shopping cart. No one will fine you or kill you for not returning your shopping cart. You gain nothing by returning your shopping cart. You must return the shopping cart out of the goodness of your own heart. You must return the shopping cart because it is the right thing to do, because it is correct. A person who is unable to do this is no better than an animal, an absolute savage who can only be made to do what is right by threatening them with the law and the force that stands behind it. The shopping cart is what determines whether a person is a good or bad member of society.
Yeah.
I saw that post. I was like, that would go so good with this.
Yeah. And it's a very, I mean, it's very true, although, you know, it is a very base. But my question is,
that's exactly what I was thinking, Jack.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Park it in handicap spots. Nope. leave it as buggy turned on the side. No, he just throws it down the street.
See, absolutely not. I 100% will walk all the way back across the parking lot to return the cart. Exactly. For sure.
Even in the rain.
It doesn't matter. I will, especially now, because now with all of this going on, if you put it back in the rotation, it gets cleaned before it gets pushed out to somebody else. And that's super important. I'd rather do that than have like somebody else just grab it from the lot. Yeah. So, I mean, at the very least, it's going into the cart return thing out in the parking lot. Like, there is in no situation where I'm leaving it to roll into somebody else's car or to take up a spot. That's just rude. And just like that says, it takes, even though it gives you nothing to do it, it is objectively the right thing to do.
Yes.
It is. And there's no law governing it, which, it's perfect. Though, you do get the social glares. If you see somebody leave it, you could feel the glares. I haven't ever experienced this because I'm always a good citizen.
I experience the glares from the giving point of view because I will give the glare and shake my head and look at it and go, and I'll just like stand there and look at it and go, really? Like that you're just leaving it?
Yeah.
Or I'll just grab it and take it.
Yeah, I think there was like a TikTok thing of the cart police, and they would find people that were leaving the carts and then run after them with their camera and yell at them. And I mean, they were, in my opinion, no better because they're just yelling and screaming and cussing at people.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it's because everybody has that same feeling. That's the right thing to do.
That's right.
But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Jack, once again, we disagree on everything.
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think we found some common ground. I think what we did find is that we have a more important discussion to have at some point.
About that's where we disagree.
And the dominion that we have over the earth. However, no, I do thank you for chatting with us about morality. Your input and articulation is always appreciated on the show. So thanks for coming on. For those of you that did enjoy, thanks for listening. If you didn't enjoy, thanks for listening anyway, because you made it all the way here. And that's really all that matters. you see where my moral compass is. It's all about them views, or I guess in this case, listens. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I think that we have an obligation as people that do have all of our wires crossed in the right places for the most part, to do the right thing objectively. And I think the shopping cart thing is the perfect segue to end on, because at the end of the day, an apocalyptic situation or in current day situation, ultimately what matters is, do you do the right thing because it's the right thing, or because you don't want the consequences of doing the wrong thing, or because you want people to see you do the right thing versus the wrong thing, et cetera, et cetera. So in this case where it is neither right nor wrong legally, right, to not return the shopping cart or return it, objectively, the right thing to do is return it because it is courteous. It's convenient for other people. It doesn't place other people in an inconvenient or dangerous position. And it's just, in general, everybody can agree that that's the thing you should do. And I think that if we looked at everything objectively like that, we would probably treat each other a little better. Just in general.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe. But anyways, that's that's going to wrap up level 48 of the Bonus Level Podcast. Feel free to send us emails and messages on Instagram, YouTube. Check out the show on iTunes, Google Play, and also YouTube as well. And if you'd like to see Jacob come back, just, you know, you can let us know.
I have no social media. I'm off the grid. Can't find me.
You don't have to tell him. You can just tell us, and then we'll have our people get a hold of his people.
There's a pigeon system.
And that's how we'll do it. Anyways, until next time, have a great week.
Later, taters.